clock, it's 6 a.m. I feel so far from where I've been. I got my eggs, I got my pancakes too. I got my maple syrup, everything but you. I break the yolks and make a smiley face. I kinda like it in my brand new place. Wipe the spots above the mirror, don't leave my keys in the door. I never put wet towels on the floor anymore, cause trains last so long, even after you're gone. I know that you love me, and so you will see you meant for me, and I was meant for you.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
State prison guards and maintenance workers in Washington will split a $7.2 million settlement in a class action lawsuit involving overtime worked off the clock. It was a curious case. The dispute centered over minutes spent off the clock checking over job-related state equipment or, in the case of prison guards, giving briefings to the following shift. The settlement calls for affected workers to be paid for 9 minutes of overtime per day for each day worked in the last 4 years, resulting in average payments of about $2,500 to some 2,000 people.
The Service Employees International Union, Local 1199 in D.C., has announced a two-day strike scheduled for early this month, affecting at least 2,500 nursing assistants, maintenance, housekeeping, and food service workers in 3 Baltimore, Maryland hospitals. The hospitals are proposing increasing employees' health care costs, and union members say they're going to strike if their contract doesn't include pay raises to offset the costs. The strike could be averted if an agreement is reached soon.
Does working in a slaughterhouse increase the risk of cancer? A new study by researchers in New Zealand suggests it does. The research involved examining more than 6,000 slaughterhouse workers and found a drastically significant jump in cancer cases among them when compared to the rest of New Zealand's population. Cancers of the lungs were especially prevalent. The researchers think slaughterhouse workers may be exposed to some sort of pathogen carried by livestock, especially during the slaughtering process itself, when the risk of exposure to blood and other animal wastes is highest.
The American Medical Association has officially divorced itself from a labor union it created 4 years ago in an effort to organize doctors called Physicians for Responsible Negotiation. Even though the AMA spent over $3.5 million on the project, only 38 physicians joined. The PRN will likely affiliate with the Service Employees International Union.
Starting today, workplace bullies will no longer be welcome in the Canadian province of Quebec. A new law prohibiting psychological harassment on the job is now in effect, the first of its kind on this continent. Employers can be liable for up to $10,000 in fines from the provincial government and may open themselves up to lawsuits from employees if such abuse occurs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Federal subsidies that help the working poor and disabled afford a place to live are on the chopping block. President Bush's proposed budget for 2005 cuts $1 billion from the Section 8 housing program, which provides rent vouchers to qualified people. At present, the program serves some 2 million low-income families, but if the proposed funding becomes reality, some 250,000 will either have to make it on their own or risk homelessness.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Leave it to the kooks in Congress, the right-wing pundits and talk show yakkers, to see a liberal conspiracy behind the torture photos coming out of U.S. military prisons in Iraq. To them, the public outrage over the torture and humiliation of Iraqi detainees is a lot of fuss about very little. Media coverage of it, they say, is being prolonged by liberals in order to pound Bush. Some people are overreacting. The people who are against the war are using this to their political ends, grumped Tom DeLay, the GOP congressional boss who is infamous for using anything and everything to further his own right-wing political ends. Rush Limbaugh spewed and sputtered that the pictures show nothing worse than fraternity pranks. And even Donnie Rumsfeld tried to pass off the behavior of the prison guards as abuse, not torture. Indeed, Rummy primly described one video segment as showing several American soldiers, quote, having sex with a woman detainee. Excuse my crudeness, Donnie, but having sex with a prisoner is called rape. The Mr. Sensitive Award, however, goes to Senator James Inhofe, the right-wing nutball from Oklahoma. Inhofe puffed himself up like a blowfish and let loose with this sour opinion of the vast majority of Americans who are revulsed by the torture. As I watch this outrage that everyone seems to have about the treatment of these prisoners, I have to say, and I'm probably not the only one up at this table, that is more outraged by the outrage than we are by the treatment. To gild this rhetorical lily, Inhofe then assailed all of us Americans who want a full investigation, caustically calling us humanitarian do-gooders. This is Jim Hightower saying, what kind of people would we Americans be if we were not outraged by torture done in our names? And what kind of country would we have if those responsible, no matter how high their position, were not held accountable? If that's being a do-gooder, then mark me down as a proud one.
America is a country of entrepreneurs, so it should come as no surprise that if you're a small business owner, you're helping shoulder the lion's share of the U.S. economy, and that's no easy load. Good thing you can lighten it a little at Sam's Club. Sam Walton created Sam's Club to give small business owners the purchasing power of big businesses. So no matter what kind of small business you own, when you shop at Sam's Club, you get everyday low costs on items you need every day. And to save you time, we offer click and pull and fax and pull, convenient services to help you order ahead for fast pickup. Place your order online at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. And at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up the next morning. Now that's teamwork, and we're proud to be a small part of your team. After all, while you may be carrying around the weight of the American economy, you shouldn't have to do all the heavy lifting by yourself. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, happy June 1st, my friends. Tom Hartman here, helping you win the water cooler wars 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. The second year of our program here. What do they call it? Liberal talk radio? I've been calling it uncommon sense in the radical middle because I think that the average American actually agrees with most of these positions that the cons like to call liberal. Oh, you can call it whatever you want. Here we are. And boy, do we have a lot of fascinating... I want to get in this first hour. First of all, a quant you doing something right. The reason for the quant you doing something right... People are always, and by the way, this applies to families. You can look at it psychologically, relationships, businesses, politics, nations, however you want, however you look at it. People are always doing one of two things. They're either moving away from pain or toward pleasure. A competent political campaign, for example, has to have both. It's interesting how you see that Bush's, the majority of Bush's campaigns right now are move away from pain. You know, Kerry is a waffler, Kerry this, that, the other thing. Negative campaigns against Kerry. The majority of Kerry's ads right now are move toward pleasure because he's got it that a lot of America is in pain right now. And so he's saying, we can offer you something, positive, something pleasurable. But nobody is ever just standing still. One of the ways that, I think it's in large part because of the way that we grow up. It's the moving away from pain stuff, run out in the street and I'll whack you. or do that, and, you know, whatever. I mean, that you get this immediate response with little kids if you threaten them with violence. It's not, of course, a good thing to do, but there's an immediate response. And sometimes when life-threatening situations are there, I mean, it's even probably appropriate. But the point is that it's immediate. It's like lightning. Whereas offering positive visions for the future is a gradual, slow process. It's more like gravity than like lightning. It's inexorable. If you hold a positive vision for the future, whether it's for your business, whether it's for your personal life, whether it's for your relationship, whether it's for your nation, then you will move in that direction. You will notice opportunities that you would have otherwise missed, that you wouldn't even have thought of as opportunities necessarily, because you're holding that positive vision. It's an absolutely essential thing. We all must have big chunks of moving toward pleasure stuff in our lives, as well as the moving away from pain. And this applies, you know, right across the board. So for that reason, first of all, in this program, for the couple of years here now that we've been doing this, I regularly share with you my vision of what America could be, the founder's vision of what America could be, FDR's vision, the classic, what is often referred to as liberal. I mean, around the world, it's called liberal democracy. That's thought of as a good thing. The classic idea of a country where the commons are administered, the government is administered by we the people, of, by, and for we the people, to paraphrase Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. And so, I share that with you. I do it in the articles, the op-ed pieces I read on Common Dreams. I've got a piece on Common Dreams that went up yesterday about the choices this year between empire and democracy. And I've gotten a whole bunch of emails from people going, how dare you say that John Kerry is going to be less of a, you know, empire builder than George Bush? These guys are all, you know, he's part of the DLC and skull and bones and quack, quack, quack. I'm sorry, we've got to begin somewhere. We've got to begin somewhere. And it really is. We really have come to the point in America. I mean, this is the first administration to have senior members of the administration openly admit that they think that the E word, the empire word, is a good word. That's how we need to describe America. And when you look back at history, you see that empires have always collapsed and done so in terrible ways, and that empire and democracy cannot coexist, ultimately. And I really believe that that's what this election is going to boil down to, on the local level, on the state level, and on the national level. And increasingly, those are the camps that the parties are taking, that the Democratic Party, the Green Party, the progressive parties are moving more and more toward democracy. People perceive Kerry as moving toward the middle, but, you know, look at what's really happening here. And the Republicans are increasingly moving in the direction of corporatism and empire. So, anyhow, all that said, a positive vision. I just wanted to share with you a caught you doing something right for the day. A librarian at the University of Vermont has started a nationwide trend. She just won two awards. Her name is Trina Maggi, and she won the Vermont Library Association's Sarah C. Hager Award and the National Hugh M. Hefner First Amendment Award last week. Why? Because she was one of the first librarians in America to raise an outcry about the loss of civil liberties in the United States, specifically Article 144, or Article 125, I believe it is, of the Patriot Act, which says that the government can go into libraries, among other things. I mean, they've expanded this now. They can do it with your bank. They can do it with, you know, a bookstore, anything. But, you know, she's a librarian. And going to the library used to be that if they wanted to get your records, they had to go to a judge and say, you know, we think this guy's doing something wrong, and here's some little bit of evidence of it. You don't have to prove a crime. You just have to prove the suspicion of the possibility of a crime. And the judge would issue a warrant, and they would go and do it. Now they can get it without any of that. All they have to do is say, this has to do with a terrorism investigation. They don't even have to prove it. And not only that, if the librarian then tells you that they've come in and looked at your records, the librarian can go to prison. Well, she didn't think this was such a great idea. She started writing letters about it. Bernie Sanders got involved, the congressman from Vermont. He introduced a bill in the U.S. House of Representatives, which is called the Freedom to Read Protection Act. He's gotten 144 members of the House of Representatives, including many Republicans, to actually co-sign this thing, to co-sponsor it. Although Tom DeLay, the former bug killer, the guy who inhaled too many pesticides in his career before running for the House of Representatives, has not allowed the bill to come out of committee for discussion on the House. So, it's the bottom line is not going anywhere. But in any case, Tina Magi, she really started this thing. She really, you know, woke up a lot of people, got a lot of national publicity, and she got the award yesterday. She got nationally recognized for it. And congratulations to Tina. May we all do so well. May we all be awakening folks and sharing with people things, and, you know, like, we have to hold a vision for America. Finishing up, by the way, with the Republican National Conventions, Republican National Party's convention in New York schedule. Here, we left off yesterday. President Bush will give an acceptance speech on September 2nd, standing on Osama bin Laden's dead body. Here's the proposed text of President Bush's speech. This, of course, is the outline form provided to the president by Mr. Rove's office. These are the primary talking points. Hey, freedom lovers, 9/11, democracy, freedom, stay the course, evildoers, trust my gut, 9/11, freedom, evildoers, stay the course, democracy, 9/11, evildoers, trust my gut, 9/11, democracy, freedom, stay the course, trust my gut, tax cuts, who cares about what you think, evildoers, things are great, Jesus speaks to me, 9/11, democracy, freedom, stay the course, evildoers, 9/11, freedom, evildoers, the course, stay the course, democracy, 9/11, evildoers, trust my gut. And, you know, it goes on like that for a while. It's starting to get... So, anyhow, that's... And then, good night, everybody! That'd be the end. And then, of course, the party, the post-ceremony parties. There's the Get Maxed with Rush Rocket Cap Limbaugh party, sponsored by GlaxoSmithKline. There's Rick Santorum's Dog-on-Dog Petting Zoo party, adults only, please. Bill O'Reilly will show off his Pulitzer Prize, Academy Award, and Nobel Peace Prize. And for those of you who missed the part of the show yesterday where we read the news story, shared with you the news story about how when John Ashcroft in 2001 went to the Netherlands, the embassy there had to scour the areas that he was going to be visiting to make sure that there were no calico cats, because he believes that if there's a calico cat in the area, the devil is nearby. Seriously. It was a serious story. And so, anyhow, the final event at the Republican National Committee convention will be the special buffet. John Ashcroft will personally exorcise a kindle of calico kittens, barbecue them, and serve them on toast. This program sponsored by Kraft's Thick and Spicy Barbecue Sauce. So that's the Republican National Convention gig for 9/11 in New York City. Now, moving to a little more serious topic here, and what I really wanted to get into this hour is there's a confluence coming of three different events that could create the perfect storm in a variety of different ways. These three events being our dependence on oil and our relationship with the Middle East as a consequence of it, and the civil war in Iraq, in Saudi Arabia, and ultimately in Iraq, and perhaps in Iraq as well. Number one. Number two, European participation in same. There's a very interesting debate going on in Europe right now, which I'll tell you about in a few minutes, that literally could throw the presidential election to George Bush. And this is a serious debate that's going on over there, and you know, I have some strong thoughts on that. And number three, how China figures into all of this. You say, well, what does China have to do with this? China was one of the countries that had contracts with Iraq to buy their oil, you know, that we canceled when we took over the country and gave it all to American companies or companies that were donors to the Bush campaign. And China's growing dependence on oil, and China's The Defense Department on Saturday night which is very unusual. They usually do these on weeknights, but this was clearly to avoid the news cycle. On Saturday night, released a new assessment of China's defense policies and capacities, and their assessment of China's assessment of what we would do in Taiwan with regard to Taiwan or other spots if we were to get into an armed conflict with China based on what they saw we did in Iraq. And they have completely recalibrated their strategies towards us. Number one, having to do with air and ground war, which I'll tell you about in a minute. And number two, having to do with something called the Assassin's Mace. And these three things are all coming together as George Bush is preparing to go to Europe, to make several different trips to Europe now over the course of this month or the next 3 or 4 weeks, and have the potential to reshape the planet, to reshape the planet in very significant ways. And so I just want to share with you the details of some of these things and tell you what it means, how it's going to affect us, and how it's going to affect the world that our children are inheriting, and what we might be able to do about it. 20 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. The pill that will help you escape the matrix.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
He was a famous trumpet man from our Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was a top man at his craft.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 1-866-889-8894. Our quote for the day from Abbie Hoffman. Democracy is not something you believe in or a place you hang your hat, but it's something you do. You participate. If you stop doing it, democracy crumbles. Get out there and get involved. In fact, in our second hour, there's just an absolute scandal that has broken today with regard to the Bush administration and the whole health care, Medicare cards thing. And I want to get into the implications of that, what it means, not just, hey, let's complain about it, but, you know, what does this mean? What can we do about this for the future? And what sort of a, you know, what is the vision of a positive, useful healthcare system that we can actually help build the middle class in the United States rather than harm it? And the participation, and finally, in our third hour, among other things, I mean, we've got a lot for the day here. But I got this long screed from this guy, an email about how, you got to support Ralph Nader or else. And I want to get into that a little bit. I think that's fascinating. So, but anyhow, to begin with, there's this article in The Guardian on yesterday's newspaper, the British newspaper, called The Oil Connection. And this is the beginning point of this nexus. Oh, and by the way, I wanted to mention, if you like this program, please support our sponsors. Our local sponsors, you hear their ads. Different radio stations have different sponsors. You'll hear them during the local times. Our national sponsors, Small Dog Electronics and the Progressive Magazine, we just picked up as a sponsor, which is a great publication. I read it every month when it comes out. I've subscribed for years. I recommend it very highly. And, and of course, if you're listening on the web, on radiopower.org, contribute to their efforts. If you're listening to Archives and White Rose Society, Cable Radio Network, their sponsors, and so on. Okay, here's this article in the Guardian, The Oil Connection. The Saudi Arabian authorities, as this article says, the Saudi Arabian authorities made two pledges yesterday, this being Sunday, immediately after the conclusion of the terrorist attack in the eastern city of Khobar. The first, issued by the country's de facto ruler, Crown Prince Abdullah, also known as Bush Abdullah, was to eliminate the Islamic militants with an iron fist. Now, keep in mind, this is the regime that has spawned the militant Islamic movement around the world. He's going to eliminate them with an iron fist. The second, delivered in an emergency meeting with Western oil executives, where they were basically trying to placate them and say, don't worry, don't worry, don't leave, don't panic, everything's going to be okay, we're going to take care of things. We'll keep pumping our oil. Was that he would, quote, provide a reliable supply of oil to meet world energy demand, end quote. And I assume implicit in that is, what Bob Woodward pointed out in his new book about George W. Bush, where Prince Bandar met with Bush and Woodward and said to Bush, we will make sure that in the summer of, I'm paraphrasing here, in the summer of 2004, we will crank up the supply of oil in the world markets so that the price of gasoline will drop in the United States so that your economy will be in good shape, which will help you get reelected. But what I find fascinating is that the Saudis even feel a need to reassure people a need to say to the world, don't worry, we're still going to be pumping oil, and we're going to crack down on radical Islam. It's like there's a schizophrenia in Saudi Arabia, and this is an indication, I think, of a coming civil war, and it may even be. That some of the neocons in the Bush administration, they've said it back in the late 90s, were seeing Saudi Arabia come unraveled and said we have to go into Iraq and Saudi Arabia is next. I'll share with you a quote from them about that in just a moment. But anyhow, this is point one. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
There's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
State prison guards and maintenance workers in Washington will split a $7.2 million settlement in a class action lawsuit involving overtime worked off the clock. It was a curious case. The dispute centered over minutes spent off the clock checking over job-related state equipment or, in the case of prison guards, giving briefings to the following shift. The settlement calls for affected workers to be paid for 9 minutes of overtime per day for each day worked in the last 4 years, resulting in average payments of about $2,500 to some 2,000 people.
The Service Employees International Union, Local 1199 in D.C., has announced a two-day strike scheduled for early this month, affecting at least 2,500 nursing assistants, maintenance, housekeeping, and food service workers in three Baltimore, Maryland hospitals. The hospitals are proposing increasing employees' health care costs, and union members say they're going to strike if their contract doesn't include pay raises to offset the costs. The strike could be averted if an agreement is reached soon.
Does working in a slaughterhouse increase the risk of cancer? A new study by researchers in New Zealand suggests it does. The research involved examining more than 6,000 slaughterhouse workers and found a drastically significant jump in cancer cases among them when compared to the rest of New Zealand's population. Cancers of the lungs were especially prevalent. The researchers think slaughterhouse workers may be exposed to some sort of pathogen carried by livestock, especially during the slaughtering process itself, when the risk of exposure to blood and other animal wastes is highest.
The American Medical Association has officially divorced itself from a labor union it created 4 years ago in an effort to organize doctors called Physicians for Responsible Negotiation. Even though the AMA spent over $3.5 million on the project, only 38 physicians joined. The PRN will likely affiliate with the Service Employees International Union.
Starting today, workplace bullies will no longer be welcome in the Canadian province of Quebec. A new law prohibiting psychological harassment on the job is now in effect, the first of its kind on this continent. Employers can be liable for up to $10,000 in fines from the provincial government and may open themselves up to lawsuits from employees if such abuse occurs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Federal subsidies that help the working poor and disabled afford a place to live are on the chopping block. President Bush's proposed budget for 2005 cuts $1 billion from the Section 8 housing program, which provides rent vouchers to qualified people. At present, the program serves some 2 million low-income families, but if the proposed funding becomes reality, some 250,000 will either have to make it on their own or risk homelessness.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Lover was 30 years old today. They took away all of his toys.
His mother sent newspaper clippings.
Oh, it's our favorite song about George W. 27, no, it's a cheap shot. 27 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program here with you. Tom Hartman broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, planet to planet, who knows? Okay, here, the first time that the government of the United States drew up contingency plans, not just like, hey, maybe we should do this, but I mean a specific plan to seize Saudi Arabia was in 1973, January of 1973, when the Saudis, as a result of the Yom Kippur War and our support of Israel, cut off our supply of oil and created a worldwide, you know, this worldwide echo as a consequence of this thing. So January 1973 was the first time we actually put pencil to paper and came up with this. And our invasion plan included three countries, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Abu Dhabi. And these countries know this, by the way. This is, you know, I'm not sharing with you some deep, dark secret. In July of 2002, Richard Perle, who is the chairman of the Pentagon's Defense Policy Board, one of the neocons who signed the 1998 letter, that was also signed by Jeb Bush, Paul Wolfowitz, Dick Cheney, William Kristol, urging Bill Clinton to attack Iraq. Richard Perle, the head of the Defense Policy Board, brought in his friend Lauren Marowick of the Rand Institute to give a briefing to a group of government officials. Perle, of course, at that time was the loudest advocate of a war in Iraq. The war in Iraq had not yet begun. The briefing by Marowick argued that removing Saddam, and again, this was reported in the New York Times. This is not a secret. The people in the Middle East, the Saudis know this, argued that removing Saddam was merely a means to an end, and that the end was the change of regime in Saudi Arabia. In the final slide of his presentation, it was titled "The Grand Strategy for the Middle East." It said, quote, "Iraq is the pivotal point, Saudi Arabia the strategic point." So we've got this, number one. And we've got a foreign policy now based on oil. We've got an oil CEO as president, an oil CEO as vice president. Our national security advisor used to work for an oil company, has a tanker named after her. And on, right, you know, on down through the ranks, as it were. A national security policy based on oil. Now, what does this have to do with France and Germany and Iraq? Let me get to that in just a second. We've had a few callers patiently waiting. Let's just get a few thoughts here from you on this. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to participate. Fred in Fresno, California is on the line. Hey, Fred, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Fred?
Yeah, the nature of my call is that you were talking about democracy in action. And my goodness gracious, there's a race going on today, I believe, in South Carolina. And the Democrat that's running in that is favored to win. Now, point being, wouldn't both parties be looking at this from a national perspective? This is going to take a toll in the South? And if so, what is that going to do to Bush?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't have the details on that race. Do you have anything right off the top of your head there?
I'm sorry?
I don't have the details on that race in South Carolina, Fred.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that might mean you would have had that in front of you.
I'm usually on top of the news here, but this one must have slid by me somehow.
So okay. Well,
tell me about it.
If I find anything, maybe I'll let you know.
Okay. You don't know who it is and what it is?
The name fails me at the moment. I heard just the tail end of the details earlier on the national news, and I thought that you folks might have had something like that in front of you.
Well, I'll track it down. I'll report on it either later today or we'll get into it tomorrow. It's fascinating. Thanks for the tip, Fred. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin.
Hi. You remember when Limbaugh that was getting a rush was telling everybody the Enron wasn't really responsible for the California predicament and the shortages of fuel that drove the price up. It was the environmentalists keeping the refineries offline.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't just him saying that. I mean, it was the whole entire right-wing echo machine. All the Republicans and several of the Democrats who have been subsumed, taken in by the religion of corporatism, what Mussolini later called fascism.
Okay.
You know, yeah, I remember. Anyhow, you're...
All right, there's a really interesting article on Rents.com, and it's called Big Oil Guzzles Profits as Gas Prices Rise, and it's by Greg Butterfield, Workers World.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the story, Tom, you ready?
I'll check it out.
Let me tell you this real quick. Mm-hmm. It says Bush blames OPEC, and Kerry's getting in line behind him and blaming OPEC, but that's not the truth. That's not the majority of the reason,
right.
And they're not even responsible.
Yeah, I agree, Armin. There's two problems.
Let me tell you the rest of it real quick. Since the mid-90s, mergers have reduced the number of oil companies from 34 to 15, and the oil refineries from 15 to 7. And it says in this article, the industry engineered $250 billion of total price increases since 2000, so it could reap $80 billion in profits.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you, and you know I'm totally right there with you. I mean, the oil industry is another example of Ronald Reagan stopping the enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act, which oddly was originally put in place because of the oil industry, because of Standard Oil of Ohio, because of John Rockefeller's practices in 1881. The Reagan suspension of this, and now you've got these oil. But see, I'd say the problem is even bigger than that. It's not just that we've got oil companies that are manipulating the price of oil in the United States and around the world, and controlling this resource. But that even the bigger problem is that we don't have any sort of national policy in the United States to be less dependent upon oil. And as long as our economy is dependent upon oil, and we can only produce about half of our oil here in the United States, and that amount is declining. It's been in steady decline since 1974 when we hit the Hubbard Peak, the halfway point of our oil supplies here domestically. As long as that's the case, we are going to have to, you know, if we want to follow the Bush-Cheney foreign, you know, domestic policy idea, of, you know, SUVs, $100,000 tax deduction if you buy an SUV, $3,000 tax deduction if you buy a hybrid vehicle. Maybe it's $2,000. If we continue down that road, then we are going to have to continue having these foreign adventures. We're going to have to continue spilling American blood in order to secure oil-rich parts of the world. I mean, it's just the absolute bottom line. 1-866-889-8894. Ray in South Carolina has some details on that race in South Carolina that flew by me. What's up, Ray?
How you doing, Tom?
Great.
I'm calling in on the comment on the South Carolina race. The person who's running that is Inez Tenenbaum, and she's a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And she is favored to win. The Republicans here, I think it's about maybe six or seven of them that's running also. And they don't really have a platform to run on. I mean, these guys are talking about they want to support the war on terror and preserve the sanctity of marriage and all of that good stuff, which the war on terror is a hoax because anybody can walk.
It's all slogans. It's all slogans, Ray. I mean, you know, this is what the Republicans are left with is slogans. But what kind of race is it? I mean, what are they running for?
It's a Senate race in which they're running to replace Chris Holland.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
He's retiring, but I think she's going to pull it off. I think she's going to win.
So this is not a primary race? This is the actual race for the United States Senate?
The primary race actually starts June 8th, which I think a couple weeks from now.
So I don't get it. You've got to, yeah, I mean, if you can't have, I mean, you've got a Democratic primary and a Republican primary. Is this the primary?
Well, what they're doing is they're actually running. The Republicans are running on their side to see who get the Republican nomination.
Right. Okay, and
she's going to get the Democratic nomination.
Okay, and then they're expecting in November when the actual election comes that she'll probably win. Okay, yeah. I got it. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, and the reason why I had missed that, then clearly this is a local story to South Carolina about a primary race that's happening. And there's primaries happening all in every single state right now, over these next few months. It's good news though that there's a good strong Democrat there who may end up replacing Fritz Hollings. Thanks, Ray, for calling and sharing that information with us. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. 16 minutes before the hour, Chairman Pierre. Now here's where it gets complicated. Chairman Pierre Lelouch of the NATO's Parliamentary Assembly and the director of the German Institute for International and Security Affairs, a fellow by the name of Christopher Bertram, a German, have recently written an article that was published in the International Herald Tribune in which they argue, this is like one of the top people in NATO and one of the top people in the leading German think tanks that has heavy influence over the German government, in which they argue that now is the time, that being the end of this month, June 30th, July 1st, when the new government in Iraq, so-called, takes over, so-called, that now is the time for France and Germany and of course, Russia and everybody else, but, I mean, they're basically speaking for the NATO countries and particularly for France and Germany, especially for Germany, one of them being a German. That is the time for them to offer to participate in Iraq, to get into the Iraqi situation and help stabilize Iraq. And they argue that the reason why it's so important that Europe do this right now is because the United States does not have enough troops to do it alone. As long as this thing is perceived as having only a U.S. face on it, there will be a continuing and growing insurgency against the United States. That we've bungled it so badly, we're setting up a civil war over there. That they call it just common sense. That is time. In fact, the title of the article was "Europe and Iraq: It's Time for France and Germany to Act." Now, here's the thing. I mean, these are Europeans, and their concern is that we have screwed up Iraq so badly that it left to our own devices that there will be a civil war there which could then spread to other parts of the region, and France and Germany much more than France is mostly dependent upon nuclear power now, but Germany is heavily dependent upon Middle Eastern oil. They have no domestic oil supplies of their own at all, unlike England, for example, or Norway. And so the argument is that we have screwed it up so badly and will continue to and are continuing to, that if they don't get involved right away, that this mess is going to be so bad, the whole Middle East is going to be in flames, and in order to protect their own oil supplies, they have to get involved. Now, here's the kind of, catch to this thing for us in the United States, particularly for those of us who have some interest in politics. This Friday, George Bush is going to Rome. And, Silvio Berlusconi is going to take him out to his James Bond castle and entertain him. The day after, he's going to Paris, and he's meeting with French President Jacques Chirac. The day after that, he's going to be at Normandy. It's the 60th anniversary of the D-Day landings. There will be 17 heads of state there, most all of them from Europe. And the Wall Street Journal today notes, Mr. Bush's strongest card may be the growing fear among traditional allies who oppose the Iraq war, such as France and Germany, that the U.S. could fail in Iraq. This from today's Wall Street Journal. An article by Mark Champion in London, Gabriel Kahn in Rome, Hugh Pope in Istanbul, Turkey, and Charles Fleming in Paris. That is likely, they say, to temper any desire to score domestic political points by gloating over Mr. Bush's troubles. In other words, Europe is so worried right now about how badly Bush has screwed this thing up that they're not going to shove his face in it. They may even offer to help. Bush is also, by the way, meeting with Pope John Paul II, who has consistently and outspokenly opposed the war in Iraq. It's going to be interesting to see how that gets spun by the Bushies. And he could score valuable points, the Wall Street Journal notes, with an appearance Sunday on the beaches of Normandy, harking back to a time when the U.S. came to Europe's rescue. And his last stop is going to be in Turkey. This will be on June 28th, where he's speaking at a NATO meeting. This is Turkey is going to 7,000 delegates from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. This all at the end of June, 2 days before the transfer. Now, if the Europeans get involved in Iraq on July 1st, in a big way, like they're talking about doing, and that it may well be that that's the secondary agenda to this Bush trip to Europe, his doing what John Kerry suggested a year ago or 9 months ago, go to Europe, apologize, eat crow, ask for help, bring them in, internationalize this. Let's say he does this, or let's say that they do it even without his doing that. They're just so worried about their own oil supplies. And he just kind of walks down the middle neutral.
Well, I'm a tough guy.
It will virtually guarantee his reelection, or his election. He was selected last time. It'll virtually guarantee that George Bush will be elected because he will then have his international alliance. I mean, it would completely take the issue away from John Kerry. He will then, and it'll increase the probabilities that we could have at least the appearance in November. Keep in mind, the real elections aren't until January. The appearance in November of a process of transition to democracy in Iraq that is multilateral, that is truly multilateral. And so, you know, this is a tough one. Because, you know, on the one hand, well, I'll tell you right after the break. It's 10 minutes before the hour. It's Tom Hartman here with you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month of $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Development brings better health and higher living standards to people in poor countries, but the transition can be violent. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Most countries follow a similar pattern in development, moving from poor rural societies to wealthier industrial economies. People's incomes and life expectancy rise, and birth rates and infant mortality go down. Experts call this a demographic transition. But these stages are not always smooth, according to Robert Engelman of Population Action International. He says countries hit a rough spot when death rates fall, but birth rates remain high.
Typically, death rates have dropped considerably because of better sanitation, better agriculture, nutrition, vaccination, that sort of thing. But birth rates haven't always come down. When you have fairly low death rates and fairly high birth rates, you have a lot of young people.
Engelman says that can lead to a youth bulge. Lots of people between ages 15 and 29. He says these countries are more prone to social disorder.
We found a very close correlation with the demographic transition. That is, countries that were earlier in this transition that still had a long way to go before their birth rates really came down to what we experienced, say, in the United States or in Europe. When countries were still way above that, they tended to have a lot more conflict.
Engelman says the best way to address this imbalance is through comprehensive health programs.
We believe it's really a security intervention to actually work on lowering death rates through helping prevent preventable infectious disease, and also working to encourage access to reproductive health care and family planning so that the overall trend toward lower birth rates can continue.
Engelman says health care and family planning can help developing countries through the most dangerous stages of the transition to modern societies. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I can't believe it. I just can't read the news. Another Bush in the White House got the double Bush blues.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 4 minutes before the hour, Louise points out to me, as Joe Biden says, things are always more complicated than they seem. And, you know, I said this would guarantee Bush the election. Certainly there's no guarantee. It would help him. Let's say it would help him. And so here's the situation. You know, John Kerry has been saying, hey, George, you should do A, B, and C. And so far George has done A and B, and it looks like he may be fixing to do C. Should we... You know, I have to say, you know, this is a terrible choice. What if this is the best thing for our country, and yet it may help George Bush... I personally would have to say I would support it. Even though it might mean Bush getting reelected, I think that there are larger issues, and the melting down of the Middle East right now at this particular point in time could be such a disaster. It could lead to literally a world war. But there are many people who are, well, for example, Evan Augustine Peterson, who wrote a great piece on this, he says, France and Germany should steadfastly withhold their transitional assistance in Iraq until after the USA's presidential election. And, you know, there's an argument to be made for that, too. Why reward the guy for what he's done? Mary in Santa Fe has some thoughts on this. Hey, Mary, welcome to the program.
Well, I was just going to say the same thing, which is that I don't understand why Europe would do this. They certainly don't want Bush reelected. If they could just hold off, you know, a few months, it would certainly help the world in the long run.
Yeah.
And so I have a feeling that that may not happen. Hopefully, they will wait because it doesn't make sense.
Well, there's got to be a huge debate going on over
right.
there. And of course, one of the questions is how bad are things going to have to get? And,
exactly.
And how quickly can the Europeans deploy? I mean,
right.
if they make the announcement on July 1st, could they get in there by July 15th, or is it going to be September, October, November? I mean, you know, could this be, you know, Bush's next October surprise now that some of his previous ones have gone down the tubes?
That's true. I have one other question for you. About something you said yesterday on your program about Al-Qaeda supporting Bush.
Yeah, yeah.
Where did you get that?
Oh, it's been in dozens of different news reports. I don't have the paper right in front of me, but I'm sure you could find it easily on Google.
Has it been on the mainstream media?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The first time I heard it was reported on CNN. In fact, Paul Begala, about once a week, makes a joke about it on Crossfire, about how, you know, yeah. So it's out there. It's real. Mary, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. You're in the midst of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. I'm going to ask Armin if he wants to hang on.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
State prison guards and maintenance workers in Washington will split a $7.2 million settlement in a class action lawsuit involving overtime worked off the clock. It was a curious case. The dispute centered over minutes spent off the clock checking over job-related state equipment or, in the case of prison guards, giving briefings to the following shift. The settlement calls for affected workers to be paid for 9 minutes of overtime per day for each day worked in the last 4 years, resulting in average payments of about $2,500 to some 2,000 people.
The Service Employees International Union, Local 1199 in D.C., has announced a two-day strike scheduled for early this month, affecting at least 2,500 nursing assistants, maintenance, housekeeping, and food service workers in three Baltimore, Maryland hospitals. The hospitals are proposing increasing employees' health care costs, and union members say they're going to strike if their contract doesn't include pay raises to offset the costs. The strike could be averted if an agreement is reached soon.
Does working in a slaughterhouse increase the risk of cancer? A new study by researchers in New Zealand suggests it does. The research involved examining more than 6,000 slaughterhouse workers and found a drastically significant jump in cancer cases among them when compared to the rest of New Zealand's population. Cancers of the lungs were especially prevalent. The researchers think slaughterhouse workers may be exposed to some sort of pathogen carried by livestock, especially during the slaughtering process itself, when the risk of exposure to blood and other animal wastes is highest.
The American Medical Association has officially divorced itself from a labor union it created 4 years ago in an effort to organize doctors called Physicians for Responsible Negotiation. Even though the AMA spent over $3.5 million on the project, only 38 physicians joined. The PRN will likely affiliate with the Service Employees International Union.
Starting today, workplace bullies will no longer be welcome in the Canadian province of Quebec. A new law prohibiting psychological harassment on the job is now in effect, the first of its kind on this continent. Employers can be liable for up to $10,000 in fines from the provincial government and may open themselves up to lawsuits from employees if such abuse occurs. Here's today's Dow Bob report. Federal subsidies that help the working poor and disabled afford a place to live are on the chopping block. President Bush's proposed budget for 2005 cuts $1 billion from the Section 8 housing program, which provides rent vouchers to qualified people. At present, the program serves some 2 million low-income families, but if the proposed funding becomes reality, some 250,000 will either have to make it on their own or risk homelessness.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
My, my. The highly touted benefits of globalizing America's high-tech jobs have just gotten a political comeuppance. Not in our country, not yet, but in a country that has been hailed by Washington, Wall Street, and the media as one of the chief beneficiaries of the outsourcing of our middle-class jobs, India. Endless articles have been written about the sudden economic boom in the gleaming new high-tech centers of southern India. As the CEOs of Dell, Microsoft, Intel, and the rest fatten their bottom lines by replacing American programmers and engineers with much cheaper ones in India, we were told that such self-serving outsourcing was really a morally responsible move, for it was generating a newly affluent upper middle class over there, a golden example of the boundless glories of corporate globalization. But what they didn't tell us is that this so-called boom went only an inch deep, not touching the vast majority of this nation's 1 billion people, much less lifting them out of grinding poverty and drudgery. While the government launched a PR campaign it called India Shining to tout the new high-tech economy, two-thirds of the people still depend on agriculture to eke out a living. 300 million Indians still live on less than a dollar a day, and thousands of villages have no schools, hospitals, or clean water. Indeed, the lives of the majority have worsened, for the government slashed public services, privatized agencies, cut wages, and eliminated millions of jobs in an effort to attract foreign capital and offer subsidies to high-tech moguls. But now, the people have had their say on India Shining. In last month's elections, by an overwhelming majority, they dumped the prime minister, his ruling party, and the state officials who had engineered the sellout to global corporate powers. This is Jim Hightower saying, the popular rebellion against clueless corporate plutocrats and politicians has truly gone global, and America is ripe for it, too.
Hello from Athens, Greece, folks. Now, if you're a big sports fan like me, this is the place to be. They've got them all. Take fencing. My sword of choice is always the foil over the saber and épée. You've got to see it. That's why Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels have created the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. You could win a trip to the big events in Athens. To enter, visit choicehotels.com, or every time you stay at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels this summer, you'll get a game piece with a chance to win hundreds of prizes and discounts off your next stay. Wake up a winner. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Well, I'm off to rhythmic gymnastics, where it always comes down to who nails the tightest ribbon snake. Choice Hotel. We'll see you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit choicehotels.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live all around the planet.
Yeah, seriously. It's just remarkable. You look at the stats on web listenership. We've had calls from Taiwan, Korea, England, Germany, Scotland, Australia several times. Not to mention, you know, our terrestrial radio stations and the Sirius satellite radio system. Anyhow, here, time to discuss the economic power of China. China, a very interesting thing happened very recently. China's starting to get very worried about this. And Mr. Zhang, the head of the Chinese dictatorship, is reported to have pounded on the table during a New Year's address to the Central Military Commission and demanded that the military provide him with a surprise weapon. He called it an assassin's mace. And this has since become the new jargon for China's push to gain an advantage over bigger and better rivals, specifically the United States. Specifically the United States. And, you know, in this, what is becoming a worldwide struggle over oil that is evolving out of two facts. One, the fact that the supply of oil on the planet is finite and is going away. After all, oil was made even before the dinosaurs. It's like building an economy on dinosaur bones. How many are there? You know, it's limited. And secondly, that radical Islam is the outgrowth of a deal, basically, that the House of Saud made with the devil, the Wahhabists, some decades ago, and has now turned into a civil war within Saudi Arabia between, you could call them kind of secular moderate Islamists, Muslims, sort of the equivalent in the Christian church of the Methodists, right, or the Episcopalians. And the extremists, the Wahhabists, who, you know, represented by their most famous member, Osama bin Laden, within Saudi Arabia and now all around the world, who are fighting to take the sacred sites of Saudi Arabia as well as the oil. And let's face it, let's call it what it is. There is a civil war going on in Saudi Arabia. Has been for some time. They've been trying to keep it from the world. They've been trying to hide it. It's becoming increasingly obvious. China's getting very worried about this and about the whole region and also about the actions that we've been taking. Did you know that we just deployed nuclear submarines with nuclear missiles off the coast of Guam, which is, you know, relatively close to China? They're very concerned about this. We're saying it's for Iraq. China's thinking it has to do with Taiwan. A few more details on that. 10 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the show. Dave in Humboldt County has been patiently waiting. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Oh, Tom, I don't see Europe getting involved. I don't think the citizens, the people of Europe, would support their government if they attempted it. The way I connect the dots on this is almost everything about this Cheney-Bush administration is oil, is profits for the billionaire cartel people that put him in office for that very purpose.
Yeah, as has been the case with the Bush family and war profiteering all the way back to Samuel P. Bush in World War I, as pointed out by the Nye Commission.
Yeah, and so as that gets known, and it leaks out, and I think it leaks out a lot more in Europe than it's permitted to here. I do not see the people of France or Belgium or Germany, certainly not Spain. The other day I was listening on C-SPAN 3, and the Irish Parliament, one speaker after another got up saying, Bush is supposed to visit us here. Can we cancel that? Won't our president be expected to go out and shake the hand of this dreadful man and welcome him to Ireland? That was every speaker. There was nobody got up in defense of Bush being allowed to visit Ireland.
Yeah, but what if Bush goes over there and pulls a rabbit out of the hat?
No, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Dave. I think that this would be a very unpopular move in Europe. I think it's extremely unlikely. Not only has Spain pulled out their troops, but there's enormous pressure in Italy, which is, you know, Berlusconi is Bush's closest ally. He's the only... the only guy in all of Europe who openly embraces fascism, and I mean, you know, literally, and defends Mussolini, and you know, that's where Bush is starting with this thing. But there's even pressure in Italy to you know, some 90% of the people of Italy want the Italian troops, and there's only, you know, like 1,200 of them or something pulled out of Iraq, and Poland is talking about it. Poland's president has said that he was deceived. And yet there is this debate that's going on in Europe right now that could influence the U.S. elections. We live in interesting times, Dave. We live
Thank
in interesting
you, Tom.
Times.
Keep
yeah.
up the good work.
Thank
I,
you.
I can't see it happening.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that whatever is best for the world is ultimately what happens, and best for the United States as well. I mean, I'm both a nationalist and an internationalist, I suppose.
Is there anything at all noble about why we're over there, do you think?
You know, I think that if you go back and you read the writings of the neocons back in the, you know, in the early 90s through the late 90s, I think that they are utopianists. I think that they are just like I think in its original incarnation, the Crusades were utopianist, and I think that our founders were utopianists. I mean, people who believed that we have this radical new vision, and we can make it happen, and it's going to make the world a better place. I think they're wrong, and events have demonstrated that they're wrong, and that they were badly, badly advised and badly misinformed. And the proof of that is coming along. But many of them, I think, still think that, well, they haven't been proven wrong yet, if they can pull Iraq together as a democracy, if they can then, you know, spread that around the Middle East, that will prove that they're right. And you know, maybe there is some small possibility that it would. I don't think that the way that it's been done, I don't think the cost in terms of dollars to the United States and in blood to the United States, to the Iraqi people, and to the other nations that have participated, even if we bring about a democratic Iraq, I don't think the cost has been worth it. So,
thank you, Tom. Yeah. Even at the core, though, Bush does not care about bringing democracy to the Iraqi people. Neither does Cheney, Ashcroft, anybody in that team. That may be a byproduct of what they have to do, but it's not their purpose.
I don't think Bush is into this at all. No, I think he's probably more interested in bringing about, you know, the second coming and the war in the Middle East. You know, the original thinkers of this stuff, Bill Kristol, for example, you know, the Straussians. I think that they thought that they were doing something noble. Anyway, Dave, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. The speed with which U.S. ground forces captured Baghdad. This from an AP story here yesterday. The speed with which U.S. ground forces captured Baghdad and the prominent role played in Iraq by U.S. commandos have led China to rethink how it could counteract the American military in the event of a confrontation over Taiwan, according to the Pentagon. This is that assessment that I mentioned in the last hour that they released on a Saturday night. The Chinese also believe, partly from their assessment of the Bush administration's declared war on terrorism, that the United States is increasingly likely to intervene in a conflict over Taiwan. In other words, the Chinese are getting paranoid. They're getting very worried. Now, they also looked at the Chinese are rethinking the concept that U.S. air power alone is sufficient to prevail in a conflict. After we prevailed in Kosovo in 1999 with virtually no ground troops, and it was almost entirely air power, at least initially, that won that war, as it were. They thought, whoa, you know, don't mess with America. But now they've seen what's happened in Iraq, and they're thinking, in fact, here's the report from the Pentagon. The speed of coalition ground force advances and the role of special forces in Iraq have caused the People's Liberation Army theorists to rethink their assumptions about the value of long-range precision strikes independent of ground forces in any Taiwan conflict scenario. So China is, and in the middle of this, Zhang's is demanding this assassin's mace. And all over the world, there are these military tacticians and theoreticians who are wondering, what is the assassin's mace? The report said, this from the Associated Press yesterday, U.S. officials are not sure what assassin's mace is, the report said. The report said that while the concept of assassin's mace was not new in China, it has appeared more frequently in Chinese professional journals since 1999. And they also point out that China's import of armaments has increased by 7%. That's not to mention the explosion of their domestic defense industry. You know, we now can't build missiles without parts from China. And they're doing a very good job of building their own. These include a $1 billion deal that they just made with Russia to buy Su-30 fighter aircraft. So what might be the assassin's mace? My guess, and, you know, I may be wrong on this. Who knows? But this is just my guess on this. that, you know, on the one hand, certainly, I mean, here's the speculation. The speculation is that the assassin's mace, this is something that would allow for, well, the open, you know, what the Pentagon said in their report, basically, was that the assassin's mace that China is trying to put together that could cause the United States either not to defend Taiwan or to run from the middle of a conflict in Taiwan if China decides to take Taiwan, and could deter the United States from doing anything silly like trying to cut off the oil supplies to China or competing more aggressively with China for Middle Eastern oil. They're speculating that the assassin's mace might be something like, you know, a biological agent, chemical agent. They're certain that it has to do with what's called asymmetrical warfare. Asymmetrical warfare is what the Iraqis are practicing against us right now. It's what we practiced against the British in 1776. It's where you don't do it according to the, quote, rules of war, you know, where one army marches up to the other army and they point at each other and somebody yells, fire, and we see how many people are left standing. That it will be a weapon of asymmetrical warfare. My guess is that the assassin's mace that China has been preparing since 1999 and now is talking about having ready to use against the United States is economic. That we are now so dependent upon China to buy our debt. George Bush has run us into such a deep hole, and we are having to borrow money all over the world, and the largest part of our trade deficit is with China. We owe them so much money, or rather, they hold so many of our IOUs, both buying feds, you know, buying Treasury securities to support the debt that we have as a consequence of George Bush's tax cuts for the rich, and the trade imbalance, the fact that we're buying more from them than we're selling to them, that they could bring us to our knees economically in a weekend if they chose to. They could do, you know, what George Soros did. One of the things that he did that made him so wealthy was, you know, he started speculating on currencies in Taiwan, Korea, South Korea, and Thailand. And it brought down the economies of those countries. He didn't intend to, but that's what happened. The Chinese have to have looked at that and said, we can do this to America. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today.
Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Has George W. Bush delivered on his 2000 campaign pledge to run the government more like a business? New reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics and Office of Personnel Management show that the federal workforce grew by a net 70,000 since Bush took office. And these numbers don't even count contractors who now compete for federal work. Of the 12 million people who work in some capacity for the federal government, less than 2 million are actually employed by government agencies.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I'd like to move along. This is a serious issue, but I, you know, there's a point at which you've kind of beaten something into the ground, and it's so important, I think, that people be sensitized to the real consequences to the United States security and to the future of, you know, at the individual level. Of each, you know, each of our families, our ability to earn a living, our ability to have an economy that works, our ability to maintain governance, our ability to function within the world, the community of the world, and the incredibly reckless and destructive activities that this administration has engaged in, driving up this huge trade deficit and this huge budget deficit. Most people don't understand that these are two completely different things, and they're both bad. They're both real problems, and that, you know, we must do something. And many Republicans now are even starting to talk about this stuff, and, you know, thankfully, but time will tell. Anyhow, moving along to another threat. This is a threat that maybe even this is also an economic threat, and it's also a real problem, and there's a real extraordinary possibility, a potential solution to this thing. But the George Washington University School of Public Health just released a study. It was called Urgent Matters. And the core of the study, the bottom line of the study, is that there's 43 million people in the United States who are uninsured. That as people have been doing what Bill Frist's family did, which is buying up county-run, you know, hospitals and healthcare facilities that were built with tax dollars and were operated as nonprofit facilities for the benefit of the communities. As more and more of these have been so-called privatized,
And these privatized hospitals have been increasingly refusing to take on patients who don't have insurance. And people seem to think that there is like some sort of, you know, legal requirement that they do so. There's a lot of ways that they dance around that thing. And so what is happening is that, by and large, increasingly, people are ending up in the few public hospitals that are left, the uninsured, the 43 million uninsured. And while even for-profit hospitals are required to offer emergency services to people, if people come in and they say, you know, well, I really need a specialist, you know, if somebody has cancer, they need to see an oncologist, that's not considered an emergency. And then if they don't have insurance, well, for example, one woman who testified in this, and it was quoted in this study, said that she was told that there were 500 patients ahead of her to see a specialist. Patients who needed more specialized care faced impossibly long waits to see the few specialists who would treat those without private insurance. This drives many of these patients to seek help in emergency rooms, overwhelming those systems as well. And then they point out that Bush has displayed what they call a schizophrenic attitude toward this. Last week in Youngstown, Ohio, he noted that clinics serve almost 30% more patients than when he took office. Well, you know, it's so many more people are unemployed and don't have insurance. But he saw that as a good thing. But he's also pursued cutbacks in Medicaid that could undermine the very public clinics and hospitals he aims to promote, as Ronald Brownstein points out today in the Los Angeles Times in his Washington Outlook column. Now, in the midst of this comes an extraordinary revelation, about the Medicare situation and the Bush administration. Let me tell you about that in just a moment. 29 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman here with you, discussing solutions and not false promises on the True People's Radio.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
State prison guards and maintenance workers in Washington will split a $7.2 million settlement in a class action lawsuit involving overtime worked off the clock. It was a curious case. The dispute centered over minutes spent off the clock checking over job-related state equipment or, in the case of prison guards, giving briefings to the following shift. The settlement calls for affected workers to be paid for 9 minutes of overtime per day for each day worked in the last 4 years, resulting in average payments of about $2,500 to some 2,000 people.
The Service Employees International Union, Local 1199 in D.C., has announced a two-day strike scheduled for early this month, affecting at least 2,500 nursing assistants, maintenance, housekeeping, and food service workers in three Baltimore, Maryland hospitals. The hospitals are proposing increasing employees' health care costs, and union members say they're going to strike if their contract doesn't include pay raises to offset the costs. The strike could be averted if an agreement is reached soon.
Does working in a slaughterhouse increase the risk of cancer? A new study by researchers in New Zealand suggests it does. The research involved examining more than 6,000 slaughterhouse workers and found a drastically significant jump in cancer cases among them when compared to the rest of New Zealand's population. Cancers of the lungs were especially prevalent. The researchers think slaughterhouse workers may be exposed to some sort of pathogen carried by livestock, especially during the slaughtering process itself, when the risk of exposure to blood and other animal wastes is highest.
The American Medical Association has officially divorced itself from a labor union it created 4 years ago in an effort to organize doctors called Physicians for Responsible Negotiation. Even though the AMA spent over $3.5 million on the project, only 38 physicians joined. The PRN will likely affiliate with the Service Employees International Union.
Starting today, workplace bullies will no longer be welcome in the Canadian province of Quebec. A new law prohibiting psychological harassment on the job is now in effect, the first of its kind on this continent. Employers can be liable for up to $10,000 in fines from the provincial government and may open themselves up to lawsuits from employees if such abuse occurs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Federal subsidies that help the working poor and disabled afford a place to live are on the chopping block. President Bush's proposed budget for 2005 cuts $1 billion from the Section 8 housing program, which provides rent vouchers to qualified people. At present, the program serves some 2 million low-income families, but if the proposed funding becomes reality, some 250,000 will either have to make it on their own or risk homelessness.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Like the pine trees lining the winding road, I've got a name, I've got a name.
And welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Let me tell you why we need to go back to a system, at the very least, we need to go back to the system that we had in the United States when I was growing up and during my parents' generation, which said that if you want to run a hospital... Well, first of all, most hospitals were run by municipalities or counties. But that if you wanted to start a hospital as a, you know, as a separate private organization, it had to be a nonprofit corporation. If you wanted to offer health insurance, remember when Blue Cross Blue Shield was all nonprofit? I mean, some of you probably are not old enough to remember, but I remember it well. That if you're going to offer health insurance, you must be nonprofit. Kaiser Permanente started out as a nonprofit. The laws required it. The idea being that the health of our nation is such a fundamental thing that everything else is based upon. You know, having a healthy workforce, having healthy people. That the health of our nation is something that is so valuable, so precious, so important that it would be nuts to turn it over to groups who have as their first purpose anything other than providing good health care. Now, a nonprofit organization that is incorporated to provide good health care has as their first purpose to provide health care. I'm on the board of directors, for example, of a school for ADHD kids, the Hunter School in Rumney, New Hampshire, and a community for abused children, the New England Salem Children's Trust. They are both nonprofits. I'm not paid a penny for what I do, neither are any of the other members of the board. The first purpose, in fact, really the only purpose of these institutions, is to serve the kids that are there. I mean, it's very simple. Now, if these were for-profit corporations, by law... By Supreme Court, you know, the Supreme Court has ruled this. By law, the first goal of these institutions would have to be to make a profit. And then, after they've made the profit, provide services. The Supreme Court has ruled that if you run a for-profit corporation and you fail to run it in a way that primarily benefits the stockholders, it's called fiduciary responsibility. If you fail in your obligation for fiduciary responsibility, you have committed a crime. So now, this is why, in my opinion, at the very least, we need to go back and say to Bill Frist and his buddies, in the healthcare industry, we would like back our hospitals. Thank you very much. They really ran a whole lot better 25 years ago before you guys started jacking up the prices on everybody and squeezing blood out of people. And go back to the health insurance companies and say, if you want to provide health care insurance, you have to be nonprofit. You can provide death insurance. You can provide insurance against disability, whatever. Any, you know, there's lots of You can provide insurance against people's houses burning down or their cars getting, you know, well, mine got hit with a couple of bullets a couple of months ago. I mean, it's like, you know, you can provide insurance for those things and make a living. You make a profit. You can always make a living as a nonprofit. I mean, you know, people in nonprofits can be paid well. The head of the Red Cross is paid a couple $100,000 a year. When Elizabeth Dole was the head of the Red Cross, I think it was $700,000 a year. After she left, they cut it down to a couple $100,000. But, you know, let's do that at the very least. Now, the optimal solution, in my opinion, is that we do what virtually every other industrialized nation in the world has done, and that is move to a single-payer healthcare system. I do not think that we should have socialized medicine like they have in England. I've been there. I've used the system. It's a lot better than what we have here. And it has the problems inherent in socialism, you know, when the state gets into micromanaging the details of things. But in Germany, where I lived for a year, they have a single-payer healthcare system, and you basically get a card. You know, it's kind of like your Social Security card, you know. And, you know, it's got a number on it, and you can go to any doctor you want, any hospital you want. You show up, you hand them the card, and they bill the government for the services. It's very straightforward. And it works. It works all around the world. And not only does it work, but they're able to provide better health care to their people at less money than we are spending in aggregate. If we went to a single-payer health care system, not only could we ensure the 43 million uninsured, we could also provide dental insurance to every American and eyeglasses, you know, optical insurance to every American, and not spend one penny more than we're spending right now. Why? Because billions of dollars are being skimmed off the top by the insurance companies and the private hospitals as profit to pay their stockholders. And it's inappropriate. And now we discover, here's the thing with Medicare. 73 cards, right? If you're on Medicare, good luck. You've got to go in and make a choice of which one of these 70. And once you take it, you can't change it, although the corporations can change the rules anytime they want. They have to give you, I believe it's either 1 week or 30 days notice, send you a letter. You can't contest it. So anyhow, you pick up the card you want, and of course this is all going to go away in 2006. This was George W. thought this was going to be a great thing for him for the election and the Republicans. I mean, they were all, you know, hey, look at what we did. Isn't this great? Well, it turns out there's 73 corporations that are providing these cards, for-profit corporations. And it was just revealed, the Center for American Progress just did a brilliant study on this thing. These 73 corporations have given President Bush and conservatives in Congress more than $5 million since 2000. Of those 73 companies approved by the administration, see, the administration got to pick which companies offer the cards. Almost a third of them, 20 of the 73, have been involved in fraud charges. Those 20 companies that were involved in fraud charges made more than 60% of the total contributions to Bush and conservatives made by drug card companies. Seven pioneers are linked to companies approved to drug card program. Pioneers, of course, being people who have said they'll raise more than $100,000 for George Bush. WellCare executive David Farah, David Hart, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Florida executive Michael Hightower, United Health Group CEO William McGuire, Medco president Alan Lotvin, Express Scripts board member Samuel Skinner, Pacific Care lobbyist Tom Leffler. Three pioneers at approved companies were involved in fraud at Medco, Express Scripts, and Pacific Care. Bush pioneer Alan Lotvin, Express, on it goes, this list. But here's where it gets really interesting. Here, let me just give you a few factoids about, and this just illustrates why it is so important that we have a healthcare system in the United States that is driven by the goal of providing healthcare, not driven by the goal of making money. Let's just go alphabetically through some of the companies that are providing these 73 healthcare cards, discount cards, that Medicare senior citizens are now eligible for. Starting with Aetna, A. CBS News reported on May 22nd of last year, Aetna has agreed to pay a $470 million settlement for defrauding 700,000 1,000 doctors. They wrongly cut payments to them and interfered with their recommended treatment for patients. They also gave, is a hard money contributor to Bush since 2000, $22,000 to the GOP, $183,000. Soft money contributions to the GOP, $826,750. Anthem Health Plans of Kentucky. Anthem Insurance, this is an article in the Indianapolis Star. Anthem Insurance Company has agreed to pay the federal government $74 million to settle a Medicare fraud case involving its Connecticut operations. Another big contributor to Bush. Caremark Advantage, as we go through these alphabetically. Caremark paid $7.5 million for Medicare fraud. The settlement was for false claims submitted to Medicare by a subsidiary, Amcare, Inc., in 1999. First Health Services Corporation. First Health, here's the headline. First Health agrees to pay $13 million for Medicaid fraud. HealthNet of New York. HealthNet of New York fined $500,000 by state. Agreed to refund $5 million after a random state audit found the insurer had shortchanged policyholders. What might have been found with a thorough audit? Highmark Incorporated. Highmark paid a $1.5 million federal fine for Medicare fraud. This was to settle potential civil lawsuits that one of its divisions altered Medicare files and claims information from 1992 to the 1994. That from an article in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, April of this year. Horizon Healthcare Services, another hard money. All of these, by the way, with the exception of HealthNet of New York, are contributors to Bush. Horizon fines for Medicare fraud. Quote, the former Horizon Healthcare Services, the former owners and managers of two Massachusetts nursing homes that specialize in the care of brain-injured patients have agreed to pay a $1.5 million settlement to resolve separate allegations of patient abuse and neglect, improper transferring and billing of residents, and Medicaid fraud. We're still in the H's here. Humana. Humana Health Plan, Inc. Humana paid $14.5 million in federal Medicare fines. Have you noticed, by the way, that Medicare has never been charged with fraud? That we don't find, you know, these bureaucrats that the cons love to say, hey, you want bureaucrats deciding your... The bureaucrats have not been charged with ripping us off. Why? Because their job is to provide services. And they have a salary and they've got a good, you know, pension. They're members of the Federal Union, Employees Union, one of the last. I mean, part of this whole deregulation, privatization thing is, again, part of the whole conservative agenda to destroy unions in the United States. Anyhow, Humana paid $14.5 million, overbilling for thousands of patients, mostly in South Florida. To the U.S. Attorney's Office in Miami. Humana Medical Plan, Inc., another Humana division that is offering a separate card. They paid $8 million in fines for Medicare Medicaid fraud. Independence Blue Cross. Independence Blue Cross forced to settle a lawsuit for misleading doctors. Lovelace Health Plan, Inc., another hard money contributor to Bush. Lovelace pays $24.5 million in fines for Medicare fraud. Lovelace Health Systems of Albuquerque will pay $24.5 million to settle a Medicare fraud probe. And just think, if they're paying these fines, first of all, what didn't get caught? And how, you know, to what extent have we, and these are the companies that the Bush administration said, yeah, we'll let them provide these discount cards to the services. We're up to the M's here. Medco, which has given hard money contributions to Bush, PAC money contributions to the GOP, and soft money contributions to the GOP. Medco to pay $29 million to 20 states for fraud charges. The nation's largest pharmacy benefits manufacturer, this is an Associated Press story, will pay $29 million to settle allegations by 20 states that it pressured doctors to switch patients' medications to benefit its bottom line. See, this is the collision Why do we have a health care system in the first place? Is it to make people like Bill Frist multimillionaires, or is it to keep us healthy? What is it? Pacific Care of California. Pacific Care of another one of the health care. Contributed $223,800 in soft money contributions to Bush since 2000. $205,750 in PAC money contributions to Bush since 2000. Hard money contributions to Bush. Pacific Care paid $87.3 million for fraud. Pacific Care Health Systems agreed to pay the federal government $87.3 million to settle alleged violations of the Federal False Claims Act. Rocky Mountain Health Plans, another company that's offering the cards. According to Modern Healthcare Magazine, 822.99, Rocky Mountain Healthcare paid $1.5 million. They've only given $25,000 in soft money to Bush, by the way. $1.5 million in criminal fines for fraud. They pleaded guilty to a single count of criminal conspiracy to obstruct a federal audit and resolve the civil charges without admitting wrongdoing. They agreed to pay $12 million to settle the civil charges and $1.5 million to settle the criminal charge. I'll bet Martha Stewart wishes she could just pay $1.5 million to settle a criminal charge, but she's a human being, not a corporation. Tenant Choices, Inc. Tenant, another one of the providers. Tenant paid $54 million in fines for fraud. Tenant Healthcare Corp., California's largest hospital chain, agreed Wednesday to pay $54 million. This is from the LA Times, 8703. In a separate, another charge against them, Tenant sued by federal government for Medicare fraud. They're accused of bilking the government of $115 million between 1992 and 1998. That reported by the San Diego Union-Tribune. In January of 2003, the San Francisco Chronicle reported a month later, Tenant paid $4 million for Medicare fraud in Florida. It agreed to pay $4.15 million plus interest to settle allegations that five of its hospitals in Florida had overbilled Medicare in the mid-1990s. In last month, the month before last, January, March, what is it, 3 months ago, March 25th of 2004, another one with Tenant. Tenant paid $8.2 million in Medicare fraud case, according to the Associated Press. And then on April 14th of this year, the Associated Press reports, Tenant announced today that the company has been informed of two unrelated new inquiries. Well, here's the headline tells it all. Tenant under two new federal investigations. We're almost to the end here. I'll just wrap it up. United Healthcare of Florida pays a $4 million fine and a $1.5 million Medicaid fraud fine, and WellPoint Pharmacy Management pays a $9 million Medicare fraud fine. These, the buddies of the Bush administration who are going to help out our seniors. We can do better than that in America. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Some fishing practices are tearing up the sides of underwater mountains, and a group of scientists is lobbying to protect these deep water environments. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The bottom of the ocean is crisscrossed by volcanoes and steep mountains. Some of these underwater peaks are called seamounts. Scientists say they're teeming with marine creatures that include cold water coral, crabs, and a wide variety of fish. But they also say trawling gear is destroying those seamounts before people even have a chance to study them. Sylvia Earle directs the Global Marine Program of a nonprofit group called Conservation International.
Of the seamounts presently known, a very small number have been explored, just a few more than 200, and every one that's been looked at so far has evidence of fishing pressure already. As soon as they're described and located, there are typically fishing interests there with trawls to extract the commercially valuable species.
Earl says trawlers use metal plates or nets that are dragged across the seafloor. She says that can be extremely destructive because the nets pull up everything in their path.
Trawling, just by its very nature, is like using a bulldozer. It just destroys the entire ecosystem.
Earl and more than 1,000 other marine scientists are calling for an immediate ban on trawling in the deep ocean. They presented a statement to a United Nations meeting earlier this year. They're hoping that a UN resolution will be adopted to bring all nations together in protecting seamounts and other fragile ocean areas. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I ain't looking to compete with you, beat or cheat or mistreat you, simplify you, pacify you, deny.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you 4 minutes before the hour.
All I really
be friends with you, is it? Well, our chat room has erupted. How can Tom Hartman call British medicine socialized? If you want to get to the chat room, by the way, go to TomHartman.com and click on the chat room link. We'll get you there. It's the Democratic Forum in CompuServe. We occupy one of their rooms for 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And the reason I call it that, first of all, is because when I have been in Britain and spoke with British people about their medical system, they have referred to it as socialized medicine. I've seen it referred to as that. And the vast majority of physicians And I know quite a few of them, actually. I have, for the last 7 years, every single year, with the exception of this year, I have spoken at medical conferences in England on the subject of attention deficit disorder, including at Oxford University, in Cambridge. Anyhow, I have some familiarity with the system, and I know a lot of people on it. And I'm on a listserv of British psychiatrists, UK psychiatrists, have been for years, around these issues. And the majority of physicians are employees of the government. And the majority of nurses, they draw a paycheck from the government. And whereas and that's the definition of social, a definition, that's my definition of socialism. Whereas in Germany, very, very few, only those who work exclusively in hospitals draw a salary from the government. The majority of doctors are in private practice, and they simply get paid for their services. And it's that way. And then there's all kinds of hybrid systems. Sweden has kind of a hybrid system where there's a little bit of both. And there's different ways of paying for it. In Israel, labor unions help pay for the cost of it, as well as a payroll tax. Some countries do it as part of of an income tax. Some countries do it with there's different ways to pay for it. There's different ways to administer it. But, the bottom line for me, in my mind, is that a single-payer system is just the cleanest. It's just, it's absolutely the cleanest. It will provide for health insurance for all Americans. If we simply get the blood-sucking leeches of the insurance companies off the backs of we, the humans of the United States, and the bloodsuckers like the Bill Frist's bunch, who are making what were nonprofit hospitals for profit, and then squeezing profit out of them. We can provide health care to every American without spending one dime more than we're spending right now. It is indisputable, irrefutable. And that's what I think we need to do. Anyhow, this is Tom Hartman. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
State prison guards and maintenance workers in Washington will split a $7.2 million settlement in a class action lawsuit involving overtime worked off the clock. It was a curious case. The dispute centered over minutes spent off the clock checking over job-related state equipment or, in the case of prison guards, giving briefings to the following shift. The settlement calls for affected workers to be paid for 9 minutes of overtime per day for each day worked in the last 4 years, resulting in average payments of about $2,500 to some 2,000 people.
The Service Employees International Union, Local 1199 in D.C., has announced a two-day strike scheduled for early this month, affecting at least 2,500 nursing assistants, maintenance, housekeeping, and food service workers in three Baltimore, Maryland hospitals. The hospitals are proposing increasing employees' health care costs, and union members say they're going to strike if their contract doesn't include pay raises to offset the costs. The strike could be averted if an agreement is reached soon.
Does working in a slaughterhouse increase the risk of cancer? A new study by researchers in New Zealand suggests it does. The research involved examining more than 6,000 slaughterhouse workers and found a drastically significant jump in cancer cases among them when compared to the rest of New Zealand's population. Cancers of the lungs were especially prevalent. The researchers think slaughterhouse workers may be exposed to some sort of pathogen carried by livestock, especially during the slaughtering process itself, when the risk of exposure to blood and other animal wastes is highest.
The American Medical Association has officially divorced itself from a labor union it created 4 years ago in an effort to organize doctors called Physicians for Responsible Negotiation. Even though the AMA spent over $3.5 million on the project, only 38 physicians joined. The PRN will likely affiliate with the Service Employees International Union.
Starting today, workplace bullies will no longer be welcome in the Canadian province of Quebec. A new law prohibiting psychological harassment on the job is now in effect, the first of its kind on this continent. Employers can be liable for up to $10,000 in fines from the provincial government and may open themselves up to lawsuits from employees if such abuse occurs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Federal subsidies that help the working poor and disabled afford a place to live are on the chopping block. President Bush's proposed budget for 2005 cuts $1 billion from the Section 8 housing program, which provides rent vouchers to qualified people. At present, the program serves some 2 million low-income families, but if the proposed funding becomes reality, some 250,000 will either have to make it on their own or risk homelessness.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Owning your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Leave it to the kooks in Congress, the right-wing pundits and talk show yakkers, to see a liberal conspiracy behind the torture photos coming out of U.S. military prisons in Iraq. To them, the public outrage over the torture and humiliation of Iraqi detainees is a lot of fuss about very little. Media coverage of it, they say, is being prolonged by liberals in order to pound Bush. Some people are overreacting. The people who are against the war are using this to their political ends, grumped Tom DeLay, the GOP congressional boss who is infamous for using anything and everything to further his own right-wing political ends. Rush Limbaugh spewed and sputtered that the pictures show nothing worse than fraternity pranks. And even Donnie Rumsfeld tried to pass off the behavior of the prison guards as abuse, not torture. Indeed, Rummy primly described one video segment as showing several American soldiers, quote, having sex with a woman detainee. Excuse my crudeness, Donnie, but having sex with a prisoner is called rape. The Mr. Sensitive Award, however, goes to Senator James Inhofe, the right-wing nutball from Oklahoma. Inhofe puffed himself up like a blowfish and let loose with this sour opinion of the vast majority of Americans who are revulsed by the torture. As I watch this outrage that everyone seems to have about the treatment of these prisoners, I have to say, and I'm probably not the only one up at this table, that is more outraged by the outrage than we are by the treatment. To gild this rhetorical lily, Inhofe then assailed all of us Americans who want a full investigation, caustically calling us humanitarian do-gooders. This is Jim Hightower saying, what kind of people would we Americans be if we were not outraged by torture done in our names? And what kind of country would we have if those responsible, no matter how high their position, were not held accountable? If that's being a do-gooder, then mark me down as a proud one.
America is a country of entrepreneurs, so it should come as no surprise that if you're a small business owner, you're helping shoulder the lion's share of the U.S. economy, and that's no easy load. Good thing you can lighten it a little at Sam's Club. Sam Walton created Sam's Club to give small business owners the purchasing power of big businesses. So no matter what kind of small business you own, when you shop at Sam's Club, you get everyday low costs on items you need every day. And to save you time, we offer click and pull and fax and pull, convenient services to help you order ahead for fast pickup. Place your order online at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. And at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up the next morning. Now that's teamwork, and we're proud to be a small part of your team. After all, while you may be carrying around the weight of the American economy, you shouldn't have to do all the heavy lifting by yourself. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the third hour of our program today, Tuesday, the 1st of June. That has to have some astrological significance. It's not like an equinox or something, but it is. The month has turned 309 days since Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame, got outed in an entire CIA counterterrorism operation, got brought down by Karl Rove and buddies as their way of punishing Joe Wilson for speaking out, for telling the truth, for saying that George W. had lied in his State of the Union address. Of course, Karl Rove has some rather strong thoughts on what happened 309 days ago today.
At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
Yeah, there you go. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, 572 days since we began the search for weapons of mass destruction. The reason, of course, given to us by our president as to why we had to leapfrog over the UN's inspection process, tell the rest of the world, hey, we're not going to wait, we're going now. Don't you realize we got to get this thing done in time for the presidential election? 957 days since the anthrax killer struck, virtually guaranteeing the passage of the Patriot Act, particularly since he struck the office of Patrick Leahy, who was then the Democratic head as a result of Jim Jeffords jumping parties or leaving the Republican Party. Pat Leahy had become the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which was holding that bill. He could have refused to release it. And Tom DeLay, the head of the Democrats. Gee, the only two members of the Senate who got anthrax. What a coincidence. 987 days since George Bush said Osama bin Laden, dead or alive. I'm betting it'll happen before the convention. 9 minutes past the hour. Kevin is on the line in, Tampa, Florida, as I recall, Kevin? I've lost my chat window there. Hey.
Hey, listen, I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
I've been wondering about this for quite a while now, and the first time I heard it brought up by anybody in the media was, believe it or not, yesterday, Katie Couric. I was watching the Today Show.
Mm-hmm.
And she had, I think it was General Myers on. I'd like to know why Bush, of course that's kind of a stupid question on my part, but why Bush isn't being pushed about this total sovereignty thing. I've gone into Merriam-Webster, and the definition for sovereignty is they have two definitions. A, supreme power, especially over a body politic, and B, freedom from external control.
Yeah, it's unambiguous.
Regarding are neither.
Yeah.
They're not getting total sovereignty. Why isn't anybody calling them on this?
You know, it's funny. I mentioned on this show last week when Bush gave his speech and he said we are going to give them total sovereignty, and then later he said we're going to give them real sovereignty, and I said, you know, not only is that not the case, but that everybody in the administration is saying that's not the case, and I think, frankly, Kevin, that the reason why the media has not called George Bush on this is because they are just so used to him lying. And I say that not as a, frankly, I'm not one of, the Republicans have this phrase, Bush hater, right? Mm-hmm. I don't hate George Bush. I really don't. I think he's a dangerous man. I think he's destructive to democracy. I think he's sold out to corporate interests. I think he's sold his soul. I think his whole family has. But I'm sure that, you know, he probably is a good father who loves his children. He might be a decent husband. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's many good qualities to George Bush. I don't hate him. But I got to tell you, I am so used to being lied to by George Bush about everything from clear skies initiatives to healthy forests initiatives to Medicare that's going to help us all to hospital reform to tort reform to, you know, I mean, just the list is endless. I am so used to being lied to by him, and I think the rest of the media is, and I think much of America is, that it just doesn't shock anybody anymore.
Yeah, but my point about it with the media is, and of course, they've let up on their responsibility for the last 2.5
hugely
years, since 9/11. But they have a responsibility to bring this out because you and I both know most of the people in this country really don't sit down and analyze. And they hear total sovereignty, they think it's total sovereignty. I'll admit, he's given them partial autonomy, but he's not giving them sovereignty of any kind.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I agree with you that the media is not doing its job, and I'm glad to hear that Katie Couric raised it with General Myers. I didn't see that.
That shocked me.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe it's a beginning. And here's the thing, you know, get out there and start raising some noise about it. Call into other talk shows, send letters to the editors of newspapers. You can, most of the news shows on TV have websites where you can send a letter to the editors.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah, and
one final point just to mention. Mm-hmm. It was kind of funny, but Myers couldn't answer the question. I think he wasn't prepared for it.
Yeah, what did he? Oh, Katie Couric asked him, what does total sovereignty mean?
No,
and he started.
No, she said, you keep on saying total sovereignty, and the president says that, but that's not total sovereignty that they are getting. And she asked some kind of a question off of that. And he just couldn't answer, and he just stumbled from one thing to another.
Well, God bless her. You know, somebody is doing their job.
Yeah, one.
Katie Couric, of all people, you know.
I know, that's a really...
Perky little Katie.
It took me... I was astonished when I saw it.
Yeah, that's marvelous. Well, thanks for sharing that, Kevin, and thanks for the call, and thanks for hanging out in our chat room, by the way. I appreciate it. It's great to hear from you. 13 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We were talking about privatizing medical care in the last hour. This hour, by the way, if you want to call about anything, the last hour of the show, we can get in any topic you want. 1-866-889-8894. The GOP not being happy with privatizing hospital care over the last 20 years in the United States and turning it over to their buddies, not being happy with privatizing, I mean, you know, with devastating our economy, essentially, you know, turning us into a corporate aristocracy from a democracy. Now, you know, here's just another dimension of it. John Mica. He's a congressman from Florida, Republican, and he's the chairman of the subcommittee in the House of Representatives on Aviation, which oversees things like the TSA, the Transportation, what is it, Security Administration or Safety Administration. He has said it's time to rethink the TSA and cut it back. See, the problem is you've got 45,000 new government employees who are members of the Federal Employees Union. But we can't have that. I mean, it's like, I mean, here's the logic, right? Here's the logic. Will the second largest army in Iraq, with over 20,000 members, armed members, are what are euphemistically referred to as private contractors, and they are paid, the salary that they draw on average is $107,000 a year. And the U.S. government has to pay companies like Halliburton. I mean, you think Halliburton comes to the U.S. government and says, hey, we're paying a guy $107,000 a year, please give us $107,000? No, I don't think so. They say, We got to pay him $107,000. Plus, we got another $5,000 for administrative costs. Plus, we got another $11,000 for training. Plus, we've got $6,000 for transportation. Plus, we've got to have $3,000 to pay our stockholders a dividend. Plus, we know we're guaranteed a 7% profit in this no bid contract. Plus, we probably end up spending $150,000 to $200,000 for each one of those $100,000 employees who are over there providing security, for example, to L. Paul Bremer, right? The guy who's our guy. Does the Army defend him? No! Private corporations in bed with the Bush administration provide security to him, and these guys are paid, you know, over $100,000 a year. And why not have the military do these things? I mean, that's their job, isn't it? Well, because it conflicts with the religion of the economic conservatives. It conflicts with this religious belief that if something can be done by government, it will be done badly, and if something can be done by private corporations, it must be done more efficiently. In fact, here from the Associated Press story, Micah and other Republicans, who are never entirely comfortable with creating a new bureaucracy, want to return all airport security screener jobs to the private sector. Micah argues that private companies will do a better, more efficient job at the screening. Yes. Like they did on 9/11. Like they did in the months after 9/11, when we discovered that although these companies were charging for the services of their employees, in some cases $20, $30, $40 an hour, they were paying them the same as Burger King was paying. I mean, come on, guys. Let's just privatize the police forces and the fire departments, too. I mean, and believe me, there are conservatives out there who argue in favor of that. In fact, the Cato Institute, the libertarian think tank, actually, I don't know if the Cato Institute has come out literally in favor of this, but I know that the Ayn Rand Institute has. The libertarian idea: if you have a fire at your house, you need to call a private company that puts out fires, negotiate with them how much you're going to have to pay them to come put out the fire at your house. Let's just privatize the police. You're getting mugged, you need to grab a cell phone quick and call, you know, your choice of five different private security companies that can come out and help you. Well, let's privatize the government. Well, that's what they're doing. Every congressman in the pocket of a corporation, or two or three even, or 10 or 20. You know, as far as I know, and I've looked into this to some extent, the only member of Congress who doesn't take, the only member of the House of Representatives who doesn't take money from lobbyists or solicit money from lobbyists is Bernie Sanders. And oddly, John Kerry in the Senate. But in any case, let's just privatize, you know, no, this is crazy. This is just absolutely crazy. The AP points out, Democrats believe the federal agency is needed to protect travelers. They say Republicans set it up to fail by refusing to give it enough money. There are problems at the TSA right now. Representative Peter DeFazio, who's the ranking Democrat on the Aviation Subcommittee, he's a congressman from Oregon, he says, I helped create the TSA, which is now being disassembled. He's not saying that happily. The cons are saying, hey, you know, the only time that we want the government doing things without private organizations involved is if they're snooping into your private life and they're under the control of John Ashcroft. Then big government is just fine. 20 minutes after the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman here with you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A new study in the Journal of Urban Economics found that city dwellers living close to a National Football League franchise pay higher rent and property taxes for that privilege. On average, a resident in an NFL city pays $184 a year, or 8% more than those without a football team. And researchers found total property taxes were about $50 million a year higher.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
He loves it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Tell me the words that are stuck in your head.
Stuck in your head.
Tell me, do you think this is real? Cause I remember everything that you've ever said.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman here with you. This is the reason. This is the reason why I think this I'll tell you about in just a second. Why I think that one of the more interesting spectacles that might happen next year. Not certainly what I'm hoping for, but it would be a very interesting spectacle. Would be if George Bush got elected as president, and the House or the Senate, or both, went Democratic. If that happened, my prediction is that within 1 year,
George Bush and Dick Cheney would be either out of office, in jail, or both. It would be a Nixon moment. And the reason why is because this sort of thing, and the, now I'm getting to what the this is so pervasive. I mean, we found out yesterday Dick Cheney personally participated in lobbying for Halliburton to get its no-bid contract. It's reported in all the wire services. It was on the news last night. I'm sorry. That is a crime. That's a crime. Yeah, politicians can take money from corporations to some extent. I mean, there are limits on what corporations can give. They can take money from private individuals representing corporations, from lobbyists, from trade groups. They can take money. But the job of being a lobbyist is not for somebody who's been elected by we the people. And when somebody who has been, I mean, this is the last of our commons, right, that they want to privatize, our government. And when somebody who has been elected by we the people takes on the task of lobbying on behalf of a for-profit corporation that is trying to negotiate with the government, they have committed a crime. And here, another one, this is the this that I was getting to. Senator, this from the Associated Press today, yesterday, Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell personally lobbied to try to win a $1 million no-bid contract for a software company with ties to his longtime supporters, the Denver Post reported Sunday. The newspaper said emails and other documents it obtained through a Colorado Open Records request show that, contrary to Campbell's assertions that his staff did the lobbying, say what? His staff did the lobbying? That's okay? Excuse me. Contrary to assertions that his staff did the lobbying, the senator himself pressed fellow legislators, regional officials, and the White House on behalf of ThinkStream Incorporated. Denver's Brownstein, Hyatt, and Farber law firm, which lobbied for ThinkStream, by the way, until parting company this spring, was the largest group of contributors to Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell's reelection campaign. It's like, you know, it's the recycle machine. And it's getting more, I mean, you go back, read the history of the Teapot Dome scandal. When, what is it, Albert Fall was his name, as I recall, who was the Secretary of the Interior. Now, I don't have any notes on this. I haven't looked it up in a couple of years, so I may have some of the details wrong. My recollection was that Albert Fall was the Secretary of the Interior, and, you know, he was responsible for public lands, and there was some land out west, Teapot Dome, that had oil under it, and he made a little deal with a, shall we say, campaign contributor to sell this government property at a cheap price. It nearly brought down an administration. I mean, this is a major scandal. And today, you look at Teapot Dome, I mean, which was international news. There was a time when people actually expected the government of the United States to be clean. And we must return to that. And that's going to require people like you and me getting involved in the political process, even if it just means voting, but particularly speaking out as loudly and often as possible. 29 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
State prison guards and maintenance workers in Washington will split a $7.2 million settlement in a class action lawsuit involving overtime worked off the clock. It was a curious case. The dispute centered over minutes spent off the clock checking over job-related state equipment or, in the case of prison guards, giving briefings to the following shift. The settlement calls for affected workers to be paid for 9 minutes of overtime per day for each day worked in the last 4 years, resulting in average payments of about $2,500 to some 2,000 people.
The Service Employees International Union, Local 1199 in D.C., has announced a two-day strike scheduled for early this month, affecting at least 2,500 nursing assistants, maintenance, housekeeping, and food service workers in three Baltimore, Maryland hospitals. The hospitals are proposing increasing employees' health care costs, and union members say they're going to strike if their contract doesn't include pay raises to offset the costs. The strike could be averted if an agreement is reached soon.
Does working in a slaughterhouse increase the risk of cancer? A new study by researchers in New Zealand suggests it does. The research involved examining more than 6,000 slaughterhouse workers and found a drastically significant jump in cancer cases among them when compared to the rest of New Zealand's population. Cancers of the lungs were especially prevalent. The researchers think slaughterhouse workers may be exposed to some sort of pathogen carried by livestock, especially during the slaughtering process itself, when the risk of exposure to blood and other animal wastes is highest.
The American Medical Association has officially divorced itself from a labor union it created 4 years ago in an effort to organize doctors called Physicians for Responsible Negotiation. Even though the AMA spent over $3.5 million on the project, only 38 physicians joined. The PRN will likely affiliate with the Service Employees International Union.
Starting today, workplace bullies will no longer be welcome in the Canadian province of Quebec. A new law prohibiting psychological harassment on the job is now in effect, the first of its kind on this continent. Employers can be liable for up to $10,000 in fines from the provincial government and may open themselves up to lawsuits from employees if such abuse occurs. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Federal subsidies that help the working poor and disabled afford a place to live are on the chopping block. President Bush's proposed budget for 2005 cuts $1 billion from the Section 8 housing program, which provides rent vouchers to qualified people. At present, the program serves some 2 million low-income families, but if the proposed funding becomes reality, some 250,000 will either have to make it on their own or risk homelessness.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We have a need not just to live, but to thrive. At the most basic level, we need food and water for sustenance and shelter from the elements. And even though it may not seem like it when you watch television, we all really do want peace in our lives.
Amen. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here, 26 minutes before the hour. What's with the Catholic Church here? I don't mean the institution headed up by the Pope, the International Catholic Church. I'm talking about it's almost like the Republican Party got taken over by the cons in the 60s, you know, and the libertarians basically, you know, kind of infiltrated and corporations now run the Republican Party. And, you know, I challenge any Republican to call me and dispute that. I mean, give me any evidence that is not true. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it's because of the scandals that the Catholic Church has endured over the past year or so with the sexual abuse stuff or whatever. But nobody is speaking up on the Catholic left. But you've got people like Bishop Michael Sheridan of the Colorado Springs Roman Catholic Diocese sending out a letter on May 1st, a pastoral letter, suggesting that Catholics must vote Republican. In our newspaper this morning, our local newspaper this morning, there was a cartoon. I think it was this morning. It might have been yesterday. Anyway, there was a cartoon, you know, the editorial cartoon. And the husband and wife sitting in armchairs, you know, in the living room watching the TV. And something going on the TV. And the wife says something to the effect of, we're, you know, you get it that they're Catholics, right? You know, it's I don't remember what it was, but something like, well, we better vote for George Bush because he's against abortion. And as she's saying this, the husband is holding a newspaper in front of him, and the top headline says, Bush calls himself war president, and the second headline says, Bush in favor of death penalty executes 136 people. And it's, you know, it's like, I am mystified. I wasn't raised Catholic. But, you know, when I was a teenager, I dated a few girls who were Catholic from the Catholic school. That's about as close to it as I got. And although I have been to the Vatican, and I have been to Castel Gandolfo, and I have met and talked with and shaken the hand of Pope John Paul II, you can find a photo of it on my website, tomhartman.com/pope.htm, along with a little story about it. It was a remarkable and interesting experience. But maybe somebody can tell me, why is it that abortion is like front and center and lying a nation into war, leading to the death of tens of thousands of innocent human beings, and putting to death on a death row in a system that has been demonstrated to be faulty over 130 individuals makes one worthy of you know, church approval. The group Americans United for Separation of Church and State is actually calling for this particular Catholic diocese to lose its tax-exempt status because they have violated federal law. So it's technically against the law for a church to lobby. This is Falwell's gotten very sophisticated at this, and you know, Ralph Reed and these guys, Pat Robertson, they produce voter guides. And it's not lobbying. They pass them out every year, you know, every election year to people who go to the church, and particularly the Baptist churches. And we're talking like 20, 30 million people go to conservative churches, Christian churches in the United States. And they pass out these voter guides. And it doesn't say vote for George Bush. Instead, it would say things like, and I'm exaggerating here, but you know, what the heck. On the issues, George Bush, in favor of motherhood and apple pie. John Kerry, in favor of Satan worship. You know, I mean, that sort of thing, right? I mean, you know, it's they define the issues, they define the questions, and then they put forward what they say are the candidates' positions, and then they say, now you decide, right? This is called a voter's guide. And the courts have ruled that that's legal. But this guy, apparently, maybe he just wasn't very sophisticated. I mean, maybe he should have called up Jerry Falwell and said, Jerry, you know, when you took that $300,000 from Reverend Moon to bail you out because you were looking at bankruptcy, and when as a result of that, then, you know, it helped further your political activities, and Reverend Moon's Unification Church, Moon, of course, being the new incarnation of Jesus Christ, according to Moon himself, buying the Washington Times, which now gives you a lot of good press and all this kind of stuff. You know, he should have called up Falwell and said, you know, how do you do that? How does the Reverend Moon do that? And how do you do that? You know, you guys who all do this stuff, how do you do it? And done it right. Because now we've got the situation where the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, their leader is, I'm drawing a blank on his name, but he does a radio show, a one-hour radio show. Anyhow, the Bishop Diocese statement said, Bishop Sheridan would be remiss as a shepherd if he did not teach the members of his flock about these issues and call upon them to conform every aspect of their lives in accordance with these moral values. In other words, we support him in saying you should vote Republican. And he further, Sheridan wrote, the Catholic politicians may not take communion if they break with church teachings against abortion rights, euthanasia, gay marriage, and stem cell research. But he didn't mention war, which the Pope has spoken out against. And he didn't mention the death penalty, which the Pope has spoken out against. He said we must apply the same standard to Catholics who vote for such candidates. In other words, if you dare vote for a Democrat, you can't take communion, according to Bishop Sheridan. What is going on with this? Jeff in Denver's on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jeff, are you Catholic?
No, but I do actually go hang out at monasteries, so I do hang around with a lot of Catholics.
Uh-huh, okay. And what do you think's going on here?
Well, it's, to me, totally bizarre. You just actually covered all the issues that I thought, you know, that I thought was really strange, is like, they don't condemn an illegal war.
Well, the Pope does. I mean, the Pope
does.
Yeah,
no, but I'm talking about the bishops and
right,
so forth.
But there's Catholics all over the world who do, and I'll bet there are Catholic bishops and priests in the United States who are condemning the war and who are condemning capital punishment and perhaps even condemning George Bush for it, who are getting no press.
Oh, I'm sure there are. I mean, if you look at the history of, like, in my lifetime in going to protests and so forth, the most dedicated anti-war protesters, anti-nuclear protesters, and so forth, were Catholics. Nuns are frequently very much activists.
Yeah, they were right out there at the forefront. You know, I mean, you know, look at the continuous protests over the years against the School of the Americas. Mm-hmm. They look at Father Berrigan. You know, it's Daniel Berrigan. Yeah, I agree.
They're the ones who dedicate themselves most to the causes. And so it's actually quite shocking to hear somebody come out in this view.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's so, the one who is the unusual. The bishop, especially the one in Colorado Springs, is the one who's unusual.
Yeah.
Rather the other way around.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I doubt that the Pope remembers meeting me. It was a very brief encounter. You know, it was more a photo op than, you know, it only lasted a few minutes.
And he always talks about you when I talk to him.
Yeah, there you go. but you know, I'd like to call him up and ask him. I just, you know, I don't, you know, because I have a lot. Actually, I have a lot of respect for this Pope. But anyhow, moving along. Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. What's up with this issue? Thanks for the call, Jeff. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Leland in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Leland, what's up?
Hey Tom, I just wanted to let you know that I used that. GeorgeWBush.com thing to send some letters to the editor out.
Oh, cool. You signed up as a team leader?
Yeah.
That's great.
It was pretty cool because it gives you lots and lots of newspapers. The only thing that takes a long time is to check boxes on the hundreds of newspapers that you can send letters to.
Right. But they have some very sophisticated technology. I mean, the Republicans have a lot of money, and they have put a lot of money into the technology of their website. And
yeah.
I just, you know, it just makes me gleeful. It's, you know, using that technology to send out these messages.
Yeah, so I sent a letter to the editor in my old hometown, and it was a very strongly worded letter about the administration approaching the record of Stalin's Russia and Hitler's Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And it got published, unfortunately, in my parents' hometown, and it caused a huge stir.
Oh, my.
And
oh yeah. My!
And so I got cut off. Not like that was that big a deal. It's happened before, but I just wanted to let you know that there's no question that it's a powerful tool.
Yeah, boy, I guess so. Well, see, the thing is, the Republicans have figured out a way to fake these messages. I mean, you type the message on their website. In fact, they give you the language for it, and you just push the button if you want, or as you did and as I do, you can either modify their form letters or just simply write your own. And the newspaper or the magazine or the television station, and they have local television stations where most local TV stations read letters on the air, you know, after the news and things. Local television stations, local radio shows, and national radio talk show hosts, when they get these emails or, in some cases, actual letters, they don't know that the RNC had anything to do with it because they are so well disguised.
The mail server is the only thing that actually you have to look at all the sophisticated computer terminology of the message in order to know actually where it came from.
Yeah, you'd have to go back and examine the IP header?
The headers
like that, yeah. Yeah, it's remarkable. Well, Leland, congratulations on the good effort and your subversive activities, and I'm sorry to hear that it has caused an estrangement with your family. I'm sure that you will resolve that. I hope so.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little time. But, you know, they're in this Republican enclave called Greenwich, Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
And it's one of those places where they think that if you call the current administration a fascist dictatorship, that you're a fringe lunatic.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
They don't realize how many people realize that, in fact, it is getting very close. Actually, it is. It may not be on. They haven't murdered millions quite yet, but they're getting close to the million mark.
Well, and the important thing to remember, Leland, is that the word fascist doesn't mean murderer. This is why I'm reluctant to use it, but yet I continuously use it because I want to educate people about it. When Mussolini invented the word fascist and when Hitler adopted it, it meant something very specific. It meant merging businesses with the state.
Yeah, I've seen that quote about corporatism.
Yeah, I mean, Mussolini made the definition, and the definition has never changed. I mean, a lot of dictionaries now say, you know, fascism, a form of dictatorship, you know, blah, 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 because Hitler called himself a fascist. Hitler also called himself a socialist, and he wasn't a socialist either, you know, national socialism. So people mistakenly think that fascist means mass murderer. It doesn't. It means somebody who's in favor of the government being in bed with corporations. And in that regard, this administration is fascistic. It absolutely is. And I'm, you know, and I'll say it, but I always have to qualify it by saying, you know, it doesn't, you know, and you know, setting aside the issue of Iraq, which I, you know, and how they handle Afghanistan and whatnot, fascism does not necessarily mean mass murder. It's just another form of government. It's the modern version of what used to be called feudalism. Anyhow, Leland, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Got to move along here. 1-866-889-8894. Preston from Denver's on the line. Hey, Preston, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Quite a bit. You were asking where the Catholic left was. You know,
yeah.
I've been wondering that myself about the Christian left and spokespeople like that getting on radio shows, writing letters to editors and things like that. I was happy to see Jim Wallace of Sojourners Magazine last night on Frontline. They had a program called The Jesus Factor.
Sojourners is a Catholic magazine, isn't it?
Or is it just a Christian magazine? Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And it's excellent if people want to check it out.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've never subscribed. Okay.
It's a great website. And I think they're doing a lot of good work to counter the way in which the right wing has co-opted Christianity. I mean, I think what Pat Robertson is doing with his massive empire is really destructive. And for him to run around as this holy man when he owns a gold mine in Liberia with the dictator Charles Taylor, I think it's quite an achievement of propaganda.
Yeah, it really is quite remarkable, Preston.
Well,
and I think, you know, those of us who consider ourselves spiritual or religious need to speak up and say, you know, it is possible to pray every day. It is possible to have what you consider to be a relationship with the Creator, however you define that. Christian terms, Jewish terms, Islamic terms, I don't care. Buddhist terms even, you know, a relationship with all that is.
Yeah.
And be in favor of the, quote, liberal agenda, the democratic agenda. And in fact, I think it's more consistent with spirituality than the Republican agenda, frankly.
I agree. And on a different topic, have you seen the film or read about the film Supersize Me?
Yeah, where the guy went on the McDonald's diet. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We had actually on this program a woman from the American Enterprise Institute, you know, one of the corporate front groups, and she did a movie where she ate at McDonald's too, and she didn't get fat. But the difference was that she was not drinking their soft drinks. See, my theory is this is all about corn syrup. The whole thing started when Coke changed its formula, and everybody started using corn syrup back in the 80s. That's when the obesity epidemic began, and my personal theory is that that's what it's all about. But anyhow, yeah, it's an interesting movie and an interesting concept. Preston, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Telling the truth, the multinational corporations don't want you to know. We'll be right back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. Its clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of CarboBlocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. Results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Development brings better health and higher living standards to people in poor countries, but the transition can be violent. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Most countries follow a similar pattern in development, moving from poor rural societies to wealthier industrial economies. People's incomes and life expectancy rise, and birth rates and infant mortality go down. Experts call this a demographic transition. But these stages are not always smooth, according to Robert Engelman of Population Action International. He says countries hit a rough spot when death rates fall, but birth rates remain high.
Typically, death rates have dropped considerably because of better sanitation and better agriculture, nutrition, vaccination, that sort of thing. But birth rates haven't always come down. When you have fairly low death rates and fairly high birth rates, you have a lot of young people.
Engelman says that can lead to a youth bulge. Lots of people between ages 15 and 29. He says these countries are more prone to social disorder.
We found a very close correlation with the demographic transition. That is, countries that were earlier in this transition that still had a long way to go before their birth rates really came down to what we experience, say, in the United States or in Europe. When countries were still way above that, they tended to have a lot more conflict.
Engelman says the best way to address this imbalance is through comprehensive health programs.
We believe it's really a security intervention to actually work on lowering death rates through helping prevent preventable infectious disease, and also working to encourage access to reproductive health care and family planning so that the overall trend toward lower birth rates can continue.
Engelman says health care and family planning can help developing countries through the most dangerous stages of the transition to modern societies. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Love me two times, baby. Love me twice today.
Jim Morrison.
Love me two times, girl.
You know, when he was a kid, they put him on Ritalin. I have a whole interview with him. I didn't interview him. Canadian Broadcasting did. Someplace on, I think there's a link to it on someplace on my website about that whole topic. Fascinating. Anyhow, four minutes before the hour, 4 minutes before the third and final hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program, and 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Raymond in Michigan, is on the line. Hey, Raymond, where in Michigan are you?
Cement City, South Jackson.
Oh, cool. That's great.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Tom, you know, what do you think? This is a coincidence that that the Archbishop should be touting the wares of Bush and those issues when Bush was just out talking about his faith-based initiative. Maybe he wants to get at the food trough.
So, okay, there's two conspiracy theories now that I've heard. That one, you know, the idea that the Catholics who are out there basically talking about not giving communion to Kerry and whatnot are betting that Bush and the Republicans will stay in power and that they will be able to be pigs at the trough of the faith-based initiatives. And that's an interesting suggestion. The other one is that they are hoping that this administration will slow down or stop or whatever, participate in resolving some of the prosecutions against the church over some of their past sins. Although, frankly, that one, that conspiracy theory makes a little less sense to me. I think yours makes more sense.
But well, you can also pile on top of that the fact that you know, he would probably be more likely in the next administration to be supportive of these voucher kinds of things for education. He wants to.
Yeah, that's right. The Catholic Church is big in the education business.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's a
possibility. Raymond, I got to move on. I got Sheila in Denver here, and only about 30 seconds left. Hey, Sheila, what's up?
Hi. Well, I'm a Catholic, a Democrat, and I live in Colorado. And the general opinion is that the choice to walk to the altar to take communion is a private decision. It's up to your own personal conscience to make that decision.
Right.
Also, the voting booth is a private personal decision. And the two do not mix.
Yeah, that was the idea of our founders.
And the bishop in Colorado Springs, we simply don't take him seriously. He had no right to come out and say what he did and the way he did.
Well,
we just don't take it seriously.
That's great to know. Sheila, thank you so much for calling. I'm sorry we're out of time here, but I truly appreciate the call and you're sharing that with us. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today, to Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby and Ben for streaming us around the planet, to our sponsors, to the folks in our chat room, to Jay for doing our music, our theme music, and to you for listening. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that